So that was a great setup for a taking your practice home talk. So usually at the last night of the retreat, there is some talk about the theme having to do with practicing with the theme, taking it home, daily life practice, and I'm just loving the circumstances. Seems like daily life and daily life has come to the retreat instead of us taking it home. So here it is. Really, this is perfect. This is the merging of practice in community, in silence, together, sangha, with concerns of daily life. Got to do this, how to take care of that, like all of that and all of this, and how do they come together? It's lovely. It's wonderful to practice with these conditions. And I have to share with you that as we had been discussing earlier, I was feeling into, ending the retreat early and all the considerations. And now as we're actually going into it, we haven't gone into it, but for me, just to share, there's a sense of excitement, curiosity to practice with these conditions in Sangha. I'm looking forward to it. So it's just different. And also my heart is really buoyed and uplifted with all the support that has been offered and just the sense that already the community is coming together. And what a beautiful way to be, what a wonderful way to experience this, experience practicing together. In retreat already, it's sweet, and you feel the support of Sangha and something together, something like this, unusual circumstances, can also even bring out even furthermore the very best in us, the best of us. Which leads me to the topic of tonight's talk, which is about the 10 paramis, the 10 perfections. It's translated paramita. The word is paramita, and it's often translated as perfection. What's the most excellent about us? So what's most excellent? Just these qualities of the heart and mind to practice with, and an equanimity, and the list is a list of 10. And given everything that's happening today, this will be a shorter talk. It is what it is. So I'll talk very briefly about each 10. But primarily, actually, let me read the list of them first, so you get them for just a sense of them, and let them wash over you at these qualities, just beautiful qualities, and see actually which one, as I read the list, which one specially you like to practice with right now, today, as daily life comes to retreat practice. First one, dana parami, generosity, giving of yourself. Second one, sila parami, virtue, morality. Okay. Oh, that was interesting. Fun. We still have power. We had more power for a moment. It seemed like it went up. Okay. It's power surge. Was that? It was sila. Ta-da! Wait until I get to the next one. There is the third one, which I'm actually, as Gil was talking about things that will be different, this is the one that really was coming up for me. Nekama parami, renunciation. Renunciation. being happy with less, more simplicity, things that we are used to, not having them. Cold shower. Fourth one, Panya Parami, wisdom, insight, discernment. The fifth one, Virya, energy, engagement, diligence, effort. That seems to be a powerful one too, apparently, according to PG&E. Kanti, patience, tolerance, forbearance, patient perseverance, patience. Satya, truthfulness, honesty. I love that word, especially satya, the sound of it, satya, truthfulness. Aditanha, determination, resolution. Resolution, determination to work with these conditions. Metta, goodwill, friendliness, loving kindness towards others and towards yourself. And the last one, the tenth one. Any guesses? Equanimity. Yes, of course. It shows up in this here too. It's so interesting, you know. Equanimity shows up in last here, and as you noticed, as Gil talked about it in the seven factors of awakening, it also shows up last there. And I think there is significance there. So if we can think of the last position as a position of honor, it's kind of as other factors are building up to. And one thing that came up for me as I was contemplating this, so I've been an academic. I was at Berkeley, academic, and writing research papers and technical papers. So usually the first author of a technical paper is the person who's done all the work, the graduate student who's done all the work. The last position, the last author on a long list of author, is usually the advisor, the person who's advised, done the advising, supported the project, gotten the grant funding. So it's kind of equanimity has gotten the grant funding for the rest of for the rest of the paramis, and really supports them in a way. So thinking of equanimity is really supporting of all the paramis. The same way that also in the other list that we talked about, on the Brahmavihara list, also equanimity showed up as last and supported all the other ones. And so that's one way to think of it. It's really the position of supporting everything else, and also everything else, all the other qualities are supporting our cultivation towards tata equanimity. No? Okay, well, maybe not. Towards equanimity. So another way also to think of these 10 qualities is that they're both the practice and the path. So in some ways, in one way to think of it, is that these qualities that I read, these 10 paramis, are the perspective of the awakened mind. From a particular perspective, looking at the world, these qualities acting in these ways is what makes sense. Nothing else makes sense. This is what makes sense from that particular perspective. Of course, kindness makes sense. Of course, wisdom arises. Of course, generosity. Of course, of course, of course. And as we are on this path of waking up, of freeing our hearts and minds, to have this perspective of freedom all the time, as we practice these practices as daily practices in small and big ways in our lives. We're inclining our minds little by little by little towards this way of seeing the world, towards this way of seeing reality. So you see how they both support each other. We practice in small ways, generosity, generosity, generosity. So it becomes a way of being. Our mind inclines towards generosity. Oh yeah, this is a quality of the awakened mind, generosity. And of course, when the mind is, when our eyes don't have dust in them anymore at all, and there's the awakened mind, this is the way that it makes sense to be in the world. So the path and the practice, they're one and the same. It's both in the micro and the macro level. These practices make sense. So the first one, generosity, dana. I love that it's mentioned first, and commentators have commented on why generosity, giving of oneself, is the first one on the paramis list. It's because it is the easiest one to practice. It is the easiest one to practice. We always have something to be generous with. It's not always money, our minds go to that, but our attention, our time, maybe a smile. Maybe we can just be a little more patient with someone in terms of our time, or give them the benefit of the doubt. That way we can be generous with them, generous with the way we treat others. So there's so many resources we have to be generous with others, to give of ourselves. The easiest one. So it's the function of dana is to dispel greed for things that can be given away. So it really works with wisdom. If one defines wisdom as the absence of greed, hatred, and delusion, generosity works with cultivating wisdom by dispelling greed. Reminds me, there is this cultural habit, cultural norm, the culture that I was raised in and come from, the Persian culture, that if you have something, if, for example, you're wearing something, if you're wearing a shirt and somebody says, oh, that's such a nice shirt, you give it to them, or you offer, you insist on giving it to them. And sometimes quite annoying, because you can't compliment anyone on anything because they insist you have it. But I was just reflecting, it's a beautiful way, like, oh, something that you're really loving, oh, let me give it up. It's a way of non-attachment. Let me practice non-attachment right here, right now. I love it, I want you to have it. And the way of practicing generosity. The Buddha says that generosity works at three different times. One is that delight arises before giving, when you're contemplating giving, during the act of giving, and after you've given, when you reflect and you think of the happiness of your heart and the happiness of the person you gave the gift to, this relationship. Another thought to reflect on that is, you know, you can take it with you. We don't take it with us. It's not really ours anyway. In the conventional way, in the legal way, yes, this is my iPad, this is my clothes, but I'm a traveler in this world. I use these things for a while. I'm not going to take them with me. They're not really, truly mine. Nothing I own is truly, really mine. Just temporary. So I'll move on. So consider generosity as you practice with the conditions here, daily life visiting us here, or taking it home, What are the resources you're abundant of? That's easy ways for you to be practicing. Again, not to force it. None of these practices, none of these paramis, you don't want to force. You don't want to should over yourself. You don't want to should. But just the sense of opening your heart with a question mark. Oh, can I be generous? So if you put a question mark at the end of every sentence, every practice, it works a lot better than if you make it a declarative. I must be generous. It becomes really heavy and kind of unsustainable. But with a question mark, oh, can I? May, is it possible? I had a practice for myself some time ago. I started, you know, whenever somebody, you know, there have been so many, especially in this day and age, and people reach out for GoFundMe and this and that. I made a practice that when anyone sent me a request on anything, I would give something. I would give something. Maybe it wasn't much, but I would give something. It was my practice of giving something. So see what your personal practice is. Another personal practice that came up for myself at some point was if there was an opportunity to give and my mind came up, well, with this amount or, you know, this gift, one of them or two of them, I had decided I would always go with the bigger amount that my mind came up as being reasonable for me. Because after some time, whenever I reflected back at the time I had chosen the smaller amount, I had regret why I hadn't been more generous. So I just made it a rule. Whenever my mind came up with bigger gift, smaller gift, bigger gift, of course, within reason, you know, with what makes sense for you. I'm just sharing some practices, some rules I came up for me in this way of making this into a practice. See, what is it for you? What practice makes sense for you that's personal for you? Might be completely different. So, okay, moving on. I better speed this up. Still 9 more left. All right, I'm just saying very briefly things about them. Sila, virtue, morality. So, the idea of virtue in Buddhism is simply the idea of non-harming, the idea of non-harming. And one aspect that I really appreciate about this is, see if I have that here. Yes, it's, there is the, you know, when, you know, a lot of times we think of precepts, for example, precepts of virtue, sila. We think of them as external actions in the world, not harming, not killing, not stealing, not taking what's not offered. But there are two dimensions. There is the external dimension, and then there is the internal dimension. So by engaging in the external dimension, by restraining, in non-harming, actually we train the mind in the internal dimension. When we act outwardly, it becomes a habit of mind, not just a habit of action. And I think those two different dimensions are very important to contemplate, because sometimes if we just have rules, external rules, they can support the internal morality, internal virtue, and also the internal virtue can give rise to the external. Here's a paragraph or two that I have from A Treatise on the Paramis by Acharya Dhammapala, which was translated by Bhikkhu Bodhi, then adapted by Gil Fronsdal, and then further adapted by Nikki Mirgafori. So here we go. So it's quite beautiful. Virtue surpasses material wealth because thieves cannot confiscate it, because it enables one to achieve supreme sovereignty over one's own mind. Virtue surpasses the sovereignty of warriors, kings, and priests. Virtue surpasses the achievement of beauty, for it makes one beautiful even to one's enemies. So poetic and true. It cannot be vanquished by the adversities of aging and sickness, since it is the foundation for states of happiness. Virtue surpasses such dwellings as palaces and mansions. In accomplishing the difficult task of self-protection, virtue is superior to troops of elephants, horses, chariots, and infantry, as well as such devices as mantras, spells, blessings, for it depends on oneself, not on others. The last part, thus, esteeming virtue as the foundation of all achievements, as the soil for the origination of all the Buddha qualities, the beginning, footing, head, and chief of all the qualities issuing in Buddhahood, one should guard diligently and thoroughly perfect virtue as a hen guards its eggs. Just love that image at the end. As a hen guards its eggs. Protecting qualities of virtue, of conduct, of non-harming. The third parami of renunciation, which you'll have plenty of opportunity tonight and tomorrow morning to work with. It's, I think, especially in our culture, in the Western culture, when we think of renunciation, it almost seems like a dirty word. Ooh, renunciation kind of seems lacking. Like, oh, I want to do all those other practices. Oh, loving kindness seems a lot more juicy, at least equanimity is more. But renunciation? So I think what can really bring a lot of heart and a lot of meaning into finding meaning and a dimension of learning and growth in giving something up is the intention with which we endow it. Because if we see something as lacking, oh, no hot showers, oh, no electricity, oh, bum, how awful, ah. Whereas if you actually endow it with meaning, oh, I'm going to renounce that. I'm going to practice without that. With my intention and turning the mind, the heart can find its strength, can really grow and find its stability and strength through giving up something that it finds comfortable, that it finds essentially pleasant, that there's a sense of grace and strength that comes through that action. And it's just the turning of the mind. The lights are still out, right? But how, what is your intention now? What's your relationship to what's happening? What is your relationship? Renunciation also, or seclusion, it's also the thought of seclusion of mind, renunciation, giving up of something that is pleasant. This factor is a big support for samatha practice, for samadhi practice, for states of samadhi, samatha practice, for unification of mind, when the mind gets concentrated. There needs to be a cultivation of renunciation, giving up the juiciness of thinking, the pleasantness of thoughts, giving them up for something better, giving them up, offering them up. Thank you, thoughts, but right now I'm giving myself to something more purposeful, something much more meaningful than the constant pleasure, drip, drip, drip pleasure that you give me. I'm going to give up. I'm going to renounce. So it's required, actually, for the mind to reach a state of samadhi, this renunciation, this giving up of the habitual thinking mind. In that way, again, not to say, oh, I'm not thinking. So really the sense of attitude of intentionally rising to the occasion. Next one, Panya Parami, wisdom. And as I said, wisdom can be defined in so many different ways. And each of these topics is at least an hour-long talk. But just to touch into them, to bring them into your consciousness right now and see which one you like to pick up and really work with more. So one way to define wisdom is it's the opposite of greed, hatred, and delusion. And its function is to, it's likened in many of the teachings to a light. I can't avoid the metaphors, given that we're talking about light. It's a light that gets shown and one gets to see more clearly the nature of reality, nature of one's thoughts, emotions, etc. The nature of reality, either personal or universal. And usually personal is a path to seeing the universal. But wisdom allows the seeing clearly. And what supports wisdom is unification of mind. So when the mind is settled, when the mind is unified, quiet, there's a state of samadhi arising, there is more likelihood of wisdom, penetrating wisdom, to actually arise and see things clearly for themselves, the clear seeing to happen. Here's a little more, another excerpt from the same source. Through wisdom, one understands the suffering of others. Through compassion, one strives to alleviate their suffering. Through wisdom, one destroys all attachments. But because of compassion, one never desists from activity that benefits others. Through wisdom, one is free from I-making and mind-making. I'll read that again. Through wisdom, one is free from I-making and mind-making. Through wisdom and compassion, one becomes one's own protector and the protector of others. And in many ways, what we've been doing this week, through all the practices, is to cultivate wisdom, is to cultivate seeing clearly, seeing the patterns of our minds, seeing so many ways in which perhaps we got caught up, we get caught up, seeing the pattern, seeing the way that actually, oh, a thought can just be a thought and be held with equanimity. It doesn't have to be acted upon, or an emotion can just be as it is. So that's what we've been doing all week, seeing clearly, non-reactively, not falling into greed, hatred, and delusion out of habit, but actually having a moment to see clearly things for what they are. Virya Parami, energy, diligence, engagement. And both we've been, of course, you've been engaging with the practice this week, managing your energy when it waxed and waned. And also in life, what are the ways that you manage your energy? Do you waste your energy? Are you wasteful with it? Do you not care for it so much? Do you not tend this precious resource that you have, your energy, your engagement? What do you engage with? Is it wise what you engage with? Do you engage with things that support you, support your heart, support your mind? Or do you engage with things that don't? So, I was going to say this later, but actually, no, I will say this for later because I think I want to say this to the equanimity. I'll just move on with Kanti, patience. forbearance, endurance, patience. This is a parami that, again, it shows up on the cushion. Of course, Gil talked about it beautifully. Can you practice patience as you're waiting, as you feel like you want to check your watch every few seconds to see, is that bell going to ring? And practicing with patience. Ah, and then when you succeed, congratulating yourself, okay, training my mind, also in your life. It's a gift that you give to yourself, patience, as well as others. It affects both people. It can be relational. Patience is not just a practice that you do for yourself, but it's really relational. It affects others, the way you show up, both for yourself. And also, are you patient with things that arise, with pains that arise, with challenges that arise for you in your life? Can you wait to get rid of them? Can't wait for them to be over with? Or is there a sense of, okay, you're doing what you can, and can you also practice patience? And again, you see that equanimity can support patience. Equanimity supports every single one of these. I'm leaving a lot of them as exercises for you to see in your practice how equanimity supports every single of the factors. But with patience, it's quite clear. Patience and equanimity really go hand in hand together. And you see things as they are, and allowing and not falling into and not moving away. There is a quality of patience that naturally arises, naturally is given birth to. Seventh one, satcha parami, truthfulness, honesty. It's such a beautiful, important quality, especially in daily life. Do you sometimes say white lies and you feel that it's okay? What if you decided not to? What if you decided to be more truthful, both with yourself and with others? I have a friend, and this person's habit of the mind was to say lots of little white lies for no good reason, really. Just, it was a habit. It really was a habit. And it became a practice for this person to reduce that. And I actually watched them become a lot more truthful and honest, even when it was challenging at times. And there was a sense of integrity. There was a sense of they're happier with themselves. A sense of joy and delight came up with being more truthful, more honest, both with themselves and with others. Aditanha, determination, resolution. This is a beautiful quality. Aditanha. So, again, these qualities are, you can look for them in your daily life in ways that you have them and in areas of your life that perhaps it doesn't show up as strongly. Maybe with practice. Maybe you haven't had a strong, you've had a strong determination. You're still here. You haven't left. And I'm sure this hasn't been a cakewalk every single moment of it. There have been moments that maybe the mind goes, what am I doing here? Sitting, breath, body, determination. It supports you when one sets a strong intention. And determination can help support you. And of course, in a wise way. With wisdom, you know, you need to have wisdom with determination. Otherwise, blind determination can be problematic. Of course, you need wisdom with all of these factors. But there's a lot of times that determination can carry us through, especially when there are challenges. When ahead of time you decide you're going to do something no matter what. No matter what, you're going to do something, no matter what. remember when I was in graduate school, and a few months before, and I was doing my dissertation, and a few months before I finished my dissertation, someone very close and dear to me passed away. And it really was an act of determination to hang in there, because those of you who'd gone through grad school, writing a thesis is miserable enough. So it really was, I'm going to do this. There's no way I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to drop it now. So I think that it really showed up in ways for me, and it carried me through. The ninth one. It's interesting that the ninth one is metta, and metta shows up right before upekkha. Metta, goodwill, friendliness, loving kindness. So much to say about this. See, in your practice, in both on the cushion and in daily life, there are ways you can be kinder to yourself. Can be kinder to others. And finally, we come at the end, of course, to upekkha, equanimity, serenity. As we've talked about it so much already this week, looking for ways that this can continue to be cultivated in your daily life, taken home from the cushion here. And just to say, the idea of equanimity, again, is not a forcing, is not a shoulding. It's not that I should be equanimous. I should not react to this. That's not equanimity. So be very, very careful how you're applying. It's not a shook, like this very difficult thing that is coming up. I should be equanimous. That's not the idea. The idea is, okay, this very challenging, say, emotion is arising. Seeing it, can it be exactly as it is without falling into it, without pushing it away? Because sometimes by trying to be equanimous, it feels like we're pushing something away in order to be something else. That's not the practice. Allowing what is there to be, without pushing it away. We've said this in so many different ways, and I'm taking the last few minutes to really emphasize and drive this home, because in some ways I have heard it, perhaps in some ways, some people trying to be equanimous. Like, am I supposed to push it away? No. That's not equanimity. That's the pushing it away part of equanimity. We're saying is the opposite of equanimity. It's not about pushing it away to be equanimous. It is like this. Can it be exactly as it is? Without pushing it away or falling into it. Breathing around it, having space around it. That's authentic equanimity. It's not fake equanimity, which is really the pushing it away. And what I did want to say earlier, and I saved it here for last, is question has come up for some of you, is as we go home in this life, in this zeitgeist, in this time, in this political time where we live, how to keep our equanimity with what is happening in our world. And one thing that also is part of our time is a lot of rage. Rage has become a very common currency. And actually someone today mentioned this term I hadn't heard, but it makes sense. Rage porn. So really taking a lot of delight in the self-righteous rage of, oh, I can't believe this person is doing this. I can't believe this person is doing that. And in fact, this is supported by some research I was hearing recently, that it turns out that state of rage actually activates some of the pleasure centers in the brain. And in the Buddhist teachings, rage, anger, is said to have a honeyed tip and poisoned root. The honeyed tip is that pleasantness that neuroscientists are talking about, is that drip of pleasure, self-righteous, ooh, feels good, I'm angry, I'm self-righteously angry because I have better morals than these other people who are not doing the right thing. Like, oh, it's juicy. It's like honey tipped. And yet has a poisonous root. It's yucky. It feels ugly. It poisons your whole body and mind. And I mean, literally poisons your body. But how it robs you of your peace, of your calm, of your ability to respond skillfully and wisely in the world. It's almost you're taking a drug that feels good, but it incapacitates you. So you can't actually respond skillfully to what actually really, really is happening. You're incapacitating yourself. So becoming wiser about how you respond, how you hold what is happening, so that you actually can respond skillfully, wisely, and not be seduced by self-righteous rage. And equanimity, again, does not mean non-action. Equanimity allows for wise action, for the space for there to be non-reactive action. So, I'm going to ask you, you've heard the list of 10. I'm going to ask you for you to pick one right now. Something you're going to work with and bring to your forefront, kind of forefront of your mind, just drop in. Whichever of them spoke to you, just think of one. Maybe it'll help if I read them very quickly one more time. There's generosity, virtue, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, friendliness, goodwill, and equanimity. Thank you for your attention.